Episode 50 of the TV Talk Machine is brought to you by Squarebox. It's a set-top box. It's a web host. It's always watching. It's a box that's square. Squarebox. Coming to you from the 808, apparently, I'm David J. Lore, the Zulu to Jason's James MacArthur, here with our own Jack Lord, the chief TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Aloha!
Aloha for our 50th. This is a milestone.
I know, the big 5-0.
Yes.
Who would have thought?
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
It was awfully nice of Jason to fly us out to Waikiki for the... Oh, no.
That would have been nice.
That would have been nice.
That's probably where he is right now. Have you noticed that he's really lazy? Because I have definitely noticed that.
I did actually startle some cats last week when I was listening to the podcast, and he goes, "Yeah, next week's the big 5-0. I won't be there." It's like I knew he wasn't going to be there, but still,
I didn't. I was like, "What? Okay,
slacker." I mean, he says he's going to Portland, but no, it's Hawaii. You know it.
Yeah, you know, although I think Portland's kind of nice. Different weather, but I bet it's kind of nice right there right now.
Like, that's
this
true.
Is the time you would want to be in Portland.
Well, and compared to what it is down by you guys, my gosh.
Oh, my God, yeah. I'm just so tired of it. So, I mean, we don't have the humidity, but it's damn hot. And I'm just, you know what, David, here's the hard part about summer. I don't actually like to watch TV when it's really hot outside or when it's really sunny outside, for that matter. So I like to watch my TV at night. And this is not helping. Long days, long nights, heat.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because, like, growing up in Florida, it's like, I'm used to the humidity, you know. So Jason's like, "Oh, it's 96 out." It's like, yeah, but it's not humid. But you're not used to it. It's okay. I won't bug you.
I know. Yeah, you can't whine about it for people who live through humidity. A, I don't know how anybody does it. If you're listening out there and you're humid, I don't know how you do it.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane.
That's too much.
I mean, all my life, I've lived in humidity except for a year in New Mexico. That was wonderful. It's like, oh, here's all those jokes about it's a dry heat. This is really nice. I could do this.
You're like, so this is a dry heat. You know, a lot of what comes out of my mouth, David, is also a dry heat. Just so you know that. Just so everybody knows that.
Well, then. So.
Yes.
The big 5-0. It's been an interesting week, right? We've got a new late night show again.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. We've got 3 episodes under his belt. What do you think?
Well, I actually like it. 4 actually. 4 under his belt. Oh no, you're right. We didn't have Monday.
Right.
Holiday. I keep forgetting that. But I like it. I thought in fact, I just posted something on THR. About the Biden interview and beyond. So about Biden and beyond, we'll put that, I guess, in the show links.
Yes.
But,
yes.
I mean, it's still very much a work in progress, as it's supposed to be. You know, as I laid it out in my first, you know, quick take on the first night, you know, he did some things that he probably shouldn't have done. I wouldn't have done the advertisement stuff. I wouldn't have done that. And he was a little nervous, but that's to be expected. But you know, even by the third episode, which was last night, as you pointed out, and with Biden, and then tonight he'll have Amy Schumer, and he's quickly getting adjusted to it. And the thing that I think gets lost, and I pointed this out in my first column, not today's, but my first column, is that the exciting part of watching Colbert is that he's bringing out parts of himself that people probably haven't seen unless they watch Strangers with Candy and maybe some of the Dana Carvey show. So this is all the stuff that people have seen so far on the Colbert Report and prior to that on the Daily Show. Stuff we're going to see in his personality now is really him. And he's not playing a part. He's not a fake newsman. He's not a fake, right-wing anchorman. He's himself. And he's a lot weirder than people think. And I think that part is coming out. And I think it's really hard for some people to say, "Oh, he's kind of wacky and I didn't expect him to do that. And that was really weird." I think we're going to have a couple of weeks of that and then people will get used to it and they'll really appreciate him for being wacky.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of liked the hummus bit, mm-hmm. but with the Oreo thing right on top of it, it was too much. Mm-hmm. It was like, just pick one and do one.
Right.
And if you're going to do one, I would have done the hummus bit just because it was weird. It was bizarre.
But it was so weird and bizarre on the first night that I'm wondering. Yeah. I mean, I applaud yeah. that he's like, okay, here's who I'm going to be. I just wish it wasn't tied around that product placement. And he's done better since then. And yes. the column I did today that got posted just minutes ago, pointing out the obvious, and that is that, like, he's really good at these political interviews, and he's gonna we now know, as we've seen a couple weeks of his guests, that he's gonna lean into a political and a more wonky area for his show, which, by the way, is ripe for the taking, because nobody is doing that. It's all celebrity. It's all pop culture schlock stuff, as to be expected in that area. I think that if he goes into that wonky direction and keeps it smart, and the Biden interview was unbelievably good for your third episode, and I think that that's going to get people's attention if they're still watched, if they didn't bail out. People will come back. Things are very circular like that. People will test, and they'll come back, and they'll hear, like, oh, no, he got better. He's not so nervous anymore. Come on back, and you'll like his affable wackiness, whatever we're going to call it. But I think one of the things that he definitely needs to work on, which is very true if you watch this first week, is his celebrity interviews, because he doesn't really do them in the past. He's always done issue-based interviews, or for the most part, issue-based interviews.
Right.
Or he was hiding behind his persona when he actually has to talk to George Clooney or Scarlett Johansson and talk about celebrity, or in their case, nothing, because neither one of them had anything to push, which I think was part of the problem, by the way.
Yes.
They are A-listers. They were put on there to pull in viewers. They were not there to sell anything. I think he will do very fine when someone's got a movie and he can talk about it. But he was trying too hard. And my suggestion in my column today was that he just go back and he take a look at and watch a lot of interviews that his predecessor, David Letterman, did with celebrities. And I think you probably agree, David, that he found a balance of something that he found almost despicable to do when he first started. He did not like talking to celebrities. They did Yes. not like to be with him because he was so grumpy. But then he found a balance where he could sort of, you know, I don't know, save his soul somehow and not sort of like become Fallon, which is the future Fallon, of course. But Letterman was able to talk celebrity with these people, but also make fun of them, make fun of himself. And also, I think he would ask them questions and make them interesting in a way that other people didn't. And that was quite a turnaround from the Letterman we knew in the early going, when no one would even sit with him or they were afraid to.
Right.
So he realized that, hey, my bread and butter is going to be these celebrities, and they're actually all of them not bad people. Let me ask them something that maybe Jay Leno would never in a million years ask them. And then we'll also talk about the movie or their album or something like that. And then he became really good at it. So I'm hoping that that's what happens with Colbert, because in the first couple, he's been really nervous. And so I want him to adapt, because you are not going to get ratings. I mean, I love that he's having these people on, but you're not going to get ratings when you have, you know, Justice Stephen Breyer on, he's going to have next week, and also the Secretary of the Energy. I mean, that's a great guest to have on.
But
yikes! Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hate to compare and contrast, but watching the Clooney interview, I couldn't help think about when Clooney was on in, like, what, the last week or two of The Late Show with Letterman, and There was similarly nothing to promote, but mm-hmm. There was sort of an ease and comfort level there, and
right.
and they could be very goofy with each other in a way that, as comfortable as Stephen is in improv and that kind of stuff, it just seemed like a little too hard, right? It was a little bit forced.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when he came on to Letterman, he handcuffed himself. Today.
Right.
And then the next night, because they taped them back to back, the next night he walks out and he's still handcuffed to Dave. And that was brilliant. You know?
Yeah, that was really good.
so, you know, and I think, yeah, he'll get comfortable. He'll relax.
Well, because you know, if you look back at it, that was not Clooney's. This was this thing with Colbert. Not Clooney's fault. Clooney was fine.
Oh yeah,
he just had nothing to do there, and it was hard to play off of Colbert because Colbert was trying to be like five different things at one time, and he was not. None of them were really inviting, and they weren't literally giving an invitation for Clooney to come play. And I think there was a hint of that in the Scarlett Johansson interview. He got a little bit better on that, and. You know, there's a future there. And as I wrote in the piece that I posted today, I think that you'll see him slowly roll out bits that he's not rolling out yet. I mean, I think at the end of this week, I was like, why are there not more taped bits? And right. And I think part of that is that he doesn't want to be like everybody else. But as I wrote in my piece, there's a reason people do those. People love them. Fans love them. They come to them. And Letterman, his predecessor, was the one who basically made that an art form. So he really needs to do it. I think you're going to start seeing – you'll see him in the next week or so roll that out. I liked the whole thing about the hat has spoken.
Yes.
I thought that was a good bit because that's very Colbert to me. I thought that was funny. It was pop culture savvy and it was kind of smart funny. You know, he was talking about things everybody feels or knows, making a joke out of it, and then kind of twisting it into a little bit of an intellectual pretzel, and I like that.
And it's an easily repeatable bit.
Yes, exactly.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like the Biden interview I thought was fantastic because I don't remember a conversation like that on late night broadcast TV in, I don't know, since maybe Tom Snyder. Almost.
Yeah, it was, and that's why everybody's freaking out today, right? I mean, in a good way. I mean, people are like, you just don't. I mean, I wrote that. You don't see shows, you don't see interviews like that on television, and not in this format, not in this arena.
Yeah, incomparable regular Scott McNulty tweeted last night afterwards. I can't help but think that if this interview had been on the Tonight Show, it would have been all about a train based game. It's like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Nothing against Fallon. I like him just fine. But, yeah.
They're different people, and they do. And and that's what I said, that it's ripe for the taking if he wants to be sort of the if he wants to be the smart one in late night. And as I point out, I think that Kimmel can do interviews equally well, and he can handle politicians. But I don't think that Kimmel, if you asked him, I don't think he'd really want that. I think he's the best host in late night right now, and I think he's got a really good balance on his show that he's earned over time. I don't think he's going to want to say, oh, well, I'm going to prove that I can do – I mean, he's interviewed Obama and plenty of people, and he's had a lot of really great interviews with people that are surprisingly emotionally and substantive on Kimmel's show too. So, but I don't think he's going to feel the need to say, oh, I need to – because of the Biden interview, I need to show how smart I am as well. He's got his area. I think that this group of – this hosts – it's going to sift out, and you will find Colbert on the high end.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty much all that's happened in TV this week, right? We're done. No.
we're never done. Sadly.
We never sleep. Well, this week we had the big Apple TV event. Well, it'll be the big Apple event, but a centerpiece of it was what they're finally doing with Apple TV. First off, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I guess this is where Jason would be the one we would want to go to, right? I mean, he was right there doing that. And I don't know. What were your thoughts when you looked at any of that? What were your immediate? I mean, you can play the sit-in for Jason on this one, and probably do an amply good job of it. So
I've already been on Pundit Showdown this week, so it's
see,
okay.
See, there you go. See? Right?
Yeah, faking the tech pundit thing. I'm interested. The Apple TV is my base other thing than the antenna right now.
Right.
I do have the Amazon Fire TV Stick.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I use on it is Sling TV, and I would love to take a hammer to it. So that's how much I like the Amazon Fire Stick.
Okay.
But yeah, I was kind of excited at the things they're adding to the Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care about the voice searching and all that stuff. Although, I mean, I guess there are people who will like that.
Right.
That's fine. And the gaming thing, well, yeah, all right, you know. Fine, mm-hmm. if that's what you're interested in.
Right.
I you know, the thing I'm looking forward to is a very smart alternative for cutting the cable. Cutting the cord. And I know, they have to be working on it. I'm sure they would have loved to introduce it this week if they could have.
Right.
But I think they were right to do what they did, to just say, all right, here it is. This is what we've got. There's room to grow. There's more there. Because, I mean, I like Sling TV, basically. Mm-hmm. But they've started... Well, it's started to get unusable because they've... Mm-hmm. They're trying to amp up the video on demand. It's like, here, watch our movies on demand. You know, pay $5 to see Hot Pursuit with Sofia Vergara and Reese Witherspoon. And we're going to break into whatever you're watching. You're watching the live stream, and you're paying to watch a live stream of Food Network or Turner Classic or whatever. But we're going to break in with our own commercial, which will be about 10 decibels higher.
Mm-hmm.
And then when our commercial ends, we're going to reset your show about 20 minutes back. And then they do it again the next commercial break, and it goes another 20 minutes back and another 20 minutes back. So it's unusable for live streams now.
Sure, that's no good.
Planning to watch anything afterwards, well, you have to either miss this or miss that. I mean, it's like, what am I paying for? I'm not paying for video on demand. I've already got other things that are much, you know, am I going to pay $5 to see Hot Pursuit? Or am I going to pay $8 a month to get Netflix and see whatever I want?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's just silly. So why are they taking the reason you have Sling is for the live stream of these things?
Right.
Why are they getting in the way of that?
Yeah, everybody wants stupid. To be something that they're not. That's what's happening. Yeah.
And so I would love for Apple TV, you know, if I could get Food Network and Turner Classic directly on my Apple TV, I don't need anything else. I literally do not watch anything else on the Sling.
Right.
You know? So I would love to see that. But until that point, I mean, this is nice. And the fact that you can customize the top level,
sure.
the top bar of stuff, mm-hmm. finally, that's been driving me nuts for years.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. The other half of that question, and you guys talked about it a little bit last week, the possibility that Apple might get into making original content.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, a smart pundit I know whose name rhymes with Mason Bell is a little dubious about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little optimistic, but only if they do something different, if they do something that nobody else is doing.
Right.
That... You know,
like the Tim Goodman talk show, that one
yeah,
that we
I
talked
see.
About last week.
I think that would be brilliant. I mean, I've got the whole Andy Richter thing down. I think
TG on TV.
You know, the thing that I'd love to see them do. And by the way, if you're listening, Tim Cook, call me.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
this is a good.
He called me last week. I said, you know, you can't afford me.
Oh man, so close. I mean, we're more fun than you too, right? Push mm-hmm. us onto everybody's devices.
Yes.
I think this idea might be in line with the customers that they're looking for, with like the Hermes bands for the Apple Watch, and you know the high end stuff that they're doing. Live theater. Nobody is doing live theater. But you go over to England, you can see National Theatre live. You can go to a movie theater, even
right.
if you're nowhere near London, and you can mm-hmm. see Benedict Cumberbatch and Frankenstein, for instance.
Right.
You can see the new Tom Stoppard play. That was in theaters this year.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see that here. Why not? You know, PBS doesn't have the funding for that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The various networks that did do that, you know, first there was Bravo doing it and they went away. Arts and Entertainment used to do that. And now they're not even called Arts and Entertainment anymore. Ovation.
Maybe it was live theater that drove them away.
Yeah, well.
It ruined them.
No. Craving Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, I mean, Apple could certainly afford that, right?
Right.
I mean, they could do it. It would fall under the parameters of doing something different, like you suggest.
Right.
And that's doable.
You know, they've got the kind of money right now that they could make a commitment to the live theater arts like the Ford Foundation did in the 60s. And because of that, that's why we have the regional theater system we have today.
Right.
So, you know, let's say you pick 12 of these regional theaters around the country, all of whom are doing exciting work, all of whom are doing new stuff. Pick one production from each of them and fund it. Just say, we're going to pay you for this. We're going to cover it'll be the budget of a normal hour-long dramatic TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Because the budget of a normal hour-long dramatic TV show would actually cover at least half, if not all, of the yearly budget for everything a regional theater would do. So that's
right.
A good deal. And then, you know, they get the rights to record it, do it well. You know, NT Live does a great job. Digital Theater over in England does a good job. So it's possible. Great Performances still does it when they
sure.
do it.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. they just don't do it as much. And then make that an exclusive thing. That's on Apple. That's what you can get. You can only mm-hmm. get it there. And I think that would appeal to that higher end audience. Maybe it would provide that into other homes too. You know, if I've heard of, like, if I see a name of somebody on The Mentalist and I search for other things they've written and I discover, hey, they've written a play, maybe I'll check out their play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, I happen to know a lot of playwrights who've gotten into TV. And, you know, I'm glad they're getting paychecks, but their stage work is really exciting, and the TV work is paying the bills.
Yeah,
that's all you can say.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes, too.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that would be a really exciting thing. And, of course, it would help support the live arts in each of those places where they record something.
Right.
And allow the theaters to do more and let them do free shows for the community and get more people in. You know, and serve people who aren't getting that kind of arts in their daily life. You know, I don't know. I have big dreams. What can
yeah,
I say?
Well, I mean, it's possible. I think anything's open for Apple. I don't know what they'll do.
I mean, I don't want to see them do an action show or a sitcom.
Oh, I do not want that either.
That would, you know. But, you know, I mean, this could go along with iTunes U. You know, their university thing. And, it's, you know, have ancillary stuff like scholarly talks with the playwrights and the directors or, you know, whatever you want. There's so many things they could do.
Well, from your lips to Tim Sears, maybe that'll happen.
I hope so. But, of course, that kind of leads to too much TV. Right.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're still there. I mean, now Epix is doing stuff. I just saw Epix is doing more stuff, not just some stuff. They're doing more stuff. So yeah. I mean, it never ends. It really never ends.
Yeah. I mean, do you really think that there'll be a contraction, or do you think we're just going to keep growing and growing?
I think. Well, that's one of the reasons I don't use that peak TV. Hashtag because yeah. we're not there yet. I mean, this is what. You know, John Landgraf was saying, like, through 2016, we're going to be growing. So we're not done growing yet. So we're we haven't hit the peak yet. It's not a peak until you peak, people. That's literally the definition of it. And so we're not there. We're still climbing. So I'm just going to say too much TV. And you know, we can argue whether it's good or bad, but and we're not there yet. But
yeah. Could it be that the networks and very well, I shouldn't say networks because we've got Amazon and Netflix and all of them too. All these content producers, could it be that they're adjusting their expectations that ratings are not necessarily the most important thing now, and they're satisfied reaching a certain number of people instead of trying to reach 30% of the American public all at once?
Well, yeah, I mean that's when. Sort of finely honed demographics really come into play, and you have to be able to make your money back. You have to make some money. You have to, you know, you have subscription models for Netflix and Showtime and HBO and such. So that's easy. And now Hulu as well, more expensively for Hulu, but you have to be able to have a living, whether it's like, okay,
yeah.
I'm going to fund this show because it's going to get me some, street cred, or it's going to get me some Emmys, or it's going to get me something, some buzz. I'm going to do that. Or you just have to, like I said, get into the granular level on your demographics and say, okay, we don't have as many millions as this show over on CBS, but we have a higher educated group watching it. we have a group that makes a lot more money. I mean, and those are everyday statistics that and demographics that the networks are privy to. That's what they'll tout that. That's part of the reason Seinfeld stayed on the air for so long. Right. So one, you know, by network standards, they look at it. If a household is over $175,000, they'll keep anything on for as long as they want, because that they can sell high end advertising. They can go to Mercedes Benz and say, "Oh yeah, great. I don't think you should put your ad on this sitcom on this other network, because that's not your audience. But our audience is, you know, X percentage of PhDs and everybody makes X amount of money. That's how you can sell, and those things will stay on the air." But they've only lowered expectations, David, because they've had to. I mean that's the thing.
Yes.
It's a brave new world. They're not adjusting well to it. The production costs of making a show are still astronomical. I mean, networks need to make shows like they're making them elsewhere, and cheaper, better. I mean, the FX model is a good example. They have fewer there, of course, but there are better ways to make – there are better and cheaper ways to do it than because they're bogged down in this old system that they haven't changed yet.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, a show like In Treatment from mm-hmm. HBO, which, I mean, I didn't love every episode I saw of it, but that was a fairly economical way to do a show, you know, two people on a set, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and as long as it's compelling.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, yeah, you have to have your Game of Thrones if you want to have your Show Me a Hero, right?
Right.
You can't just say, "Oh, well, I'm only going to do the fancy prestige thing."
Right.
But if you have Game of Thrones, you can do it. So good for them.
Yeah.
Well, the other topic I have kind of blends in with one of our listener comments. So we could just go right to letters and comments. What do you think?
Let's do that.
All right. We have a tweet from My Vogon Poetry once again.
Yes.
In the 716.
He's becoming the new TVTM version of an OG. He's original. He's an original gangster.
That's right. That's right. As soon as he asks when the riches are coming back, then
we'll know.
He'll get the the next merit badge.
Mm-hmm.
So help me, TVTM. None of the new fall shows look good. Am I just being snobby that Fargo and The Flash are all I want to see? And it's funny because I saw a couple of people even last night, a couple of other TV writers saying, you know, it's weird. There's nothing on the broadcast networks that's really got any buzz coming into the fall.
Yeah, there's very little, actually. And I was writing about this, you know, in August, late July and August when I was in L.A. There really is not much buzz. And, you know, there's some curiosity. Like, I think people will be curious, and I've watched it already. I'm about to write the review of it. I think people will be curious to see Blind Spot on NBC. I think that's something because it's, you know, it's this mystery and it's a little bit blacklist-ish. So, you know, maybe that audience will come to it. You know, and I'll watch that show some more, but it has a little bit of buzz, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm a little, I mean, I'll watch it. I'll give it a try. It reminds me of a short-lived show from the 60s called Coronet Blue about a spy who wakes up with amnesia in the middle of New York City. He just doesn't have a tattoo, and he's
right.
a he.
Right.
But, you know, we've seen the ads for it so much this summer. Because we watch America's Got Talent. The kids love it. We watch American Ninja Warrior. The kids love it. And so we get to see, we don't just see like the nice family friendly ad. We watch the whole night's programming. We get to see the one where they're scanning her and she's spinning around. And so for a while they were calling it Doodle Body because her body was covered in tattoos.
That is a much better title, by the way.
Well, see, now, because they've seen all the ads where it's like, "Hey, it's her butt! Look at her butt!"
Right.
And now it's become Doodle Booty.
Doodle Booty.
And, I mean, wouldn't you watch that show?
Absolutely. I would watch that. That's already got a season pass for me.
So, you know.
I'm all over that. I'm all about the ass. So that's I'm just going to put that down. So it's called Doodle Booty. I'm going to put that
Doodle
on my
Booty.
Okay, that's on my to-do list for the season pass.
You know. By the way, but Tim Cook, we have ideas. Call me.
We have ideas. We can make shows for you. I don't know if people will go to it. I mean, the only other show that has buzz, I think, right now, and now it's possibly turning into negative buzz. The only show that people were like, oh, I know that show. I'll watch that show. I'm looking forward to it. You could get that reaction from people. Was The Muppets on ABC. And I will watch The Muppets. Mm-hmm. I just find it disconcerting, as other critics have pointed out as well, that we don't have a pilot yet. We're not going to get one until September 15th. Yeah. I will be on vacation and newly hired, by the way, a little shout out to Dan Feinberg, who will be doing that for us. Yeah. Uh-huh. Formerly of HitFix, now at THR, and he'll be picking up that. He's going to be doing a lot of reviews for us. So it's good.
For those of you who are doing your fantasy TV critic a league, he is now over at THR.
He's over at THR. He was a good free agent acquisition.
Yeah.
He'll be reviewing it, but yeah, everybody's a little bit worried that, hey, wait a minute, why are we not getting the pilot? And they're really late, and a lot of current pilots are being redone. We've gotten notices from the networks that are like, oh yeah, you've seen that. I know you've watched that, and maybe twice because it's been so old. But we are actually going to tinker with that before it airs in 9 days, and so it's really messing people up. So I'm a little worried. Well, actually, I'm worried about a lot of stuff. And not to beat this drum until it shatters, but wow, how can you in 2015 only make one show and give that to us? And that, because I refuse to review anything that's just a pilot and make a definitive assessment of it. I always just say, well, we'll see. I don't know. Who knows? Based on this, it's terrible, but the next ones could be great. Or based on this, it's great, and the next ones could be terrible. There is no track record. And you know what? I would be stunned, and I've said this before, I would be stunned in 2016 if the networks are still doing that, because they're dumbasses. I mean, we know they're dumbasses, but they're dumbasses if they don't fix the system, which will allow them to give us two or three episodes of something so we can get a real sense of what it is. Nobody just gives you one pilot anymore. I mean, you can't do that. That is such old thinking.
But it's funny. I went to see the Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie a couple of weeks ago, because I love spies. I love 60s spies. You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I liked that it was in period. And the one thing that bothered me about it, it's another origin story. I don't care. It's basically a pilot.
Right.
I don't care. I want to see this well-oiled machine dropped into a thing and everyone has to react to them. Because that's, you know, that's what we used to do. We didn't used to have the pilot that showed the origin story. And all of a sudden, that's the trend now. It's
right.
So you can't judge on something on that.
Yeah, it's impossible, and they really got to get their act together, because it's just like, really? That's what you got? So I hope that that's more. Oh, speaking of which, and we didn't touch on this, so I'll just circle back briefly. I forgot to mention this, that something I'll be writing today is I'm writing Bastard Executioner.
Oh, right.
And people have heard of that, I'm sure, because because it's so close to the Bastard Machine. Damn it. Clearly, that's why they heard of it. No, they've heard of it because it's from Kurt Sutter, who did Sons of Anarchy. And boy, it's something completely different. And I actually like it. And I've watched the pilot is 2 hours. Which is, as John Landgraf said, we are asking a lot of people during the middle of the week to watch a pilot for 2 hours. That is asking people a lot. And then it follows up. And the reason they had to do that was because you don't get a sense of the show or the story unless you have those two. And so
right.
I believe it was Landgraf who made the decision to say, you know what, we need to run these together or we don't have any shot here. So I watched the 2 hour pilot, quote unquote, basically two episodes, and the episode that follows, and I gotta say, I like it, and I was surprised at the level of what it's going for. There's some stuff that I need to get used to, and you know, there's not a whole lot of. It's not like it's like it popped out of whole cloth, and it's this thing we've never seen before. I mean, it's a costume drama. It's set in the 14th century, so it's. It's interesting. I mean, there's Game of Thrones elements to it, and right. I think you have that sort of historical or even faux. I mean, it's true, but there's also faux-ish historical elements to it. It's interesting. I think people will find it 180 degrees different from Sons of Anarchy, of course.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it. I think it's based on a series of books too, which is kind of a surprise as a follow up mm-hmm. to Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm interested in that. I'll check out Blind Spot just because Doodle Booty.
Doodle Booty, man. That's the only Buzz show that I really know for sure will get my attention.
And I mean, I would have said The Muppets was a Buzz show, but a lot of the buzz I'm hearing online these days is, you know, wow, that's creepy.
Yeah, kind of like a bad ad campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know a couple of people who are tangentially involved in it, and they say, oh, trust me, it's going to be fine. And I say, well, okay, I will give it a shot, but I'm really nervous.
Right.
The other one that kind of, I mean, I'm sure we'll try it because the kids are intrigued, but I'm kind of recoiling at the same time, is Best Show Ever with Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, I mean, that again, that's another one Dan's going to review because it's live, obviously. Yeah. We're not going to get anything about that. It is so funny. It's like, it is the great unknown. They brought it to to Press Tour, and they basically, like, they're just showing the British series that it's modeled
right.
on.
Right.
They don't really have anything. I mean, they have a couple of things that they just made up. It's going to kind of be like this, and so who knows when we see it, what'll happen. I will say this. Oh, my God, if that doesn't work, look out below.
Oh. That's
a network that's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought Supertrain the other night when I was watching one of the promos. It's like, oh.
Ooh, Supertrain. You don't want that. They don't want that image to pop up in anybody's mind.
No.
I mean, yours is a little bit more twisted mind.
This is true.
But if anybody gets a Supertrain kind of idea, watch out. Yeah, I don't know. I looked at that. I thought, you know what? That, to me, is the ultimate hit or miss show.
I mean, I saw them describing it.
I mean, no one's really going to watch it live, are they? I mean, they might, but no one really watches live shows anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I'll watch something live if it's compelling.
Yes. You know,
America's Got Talent, I will watch live. Colbert, okay. I'm watching live.
Yeah.
Everything else, I can catch up viral video. You know,
yeah.
YouTube
exactly.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I saw them describing Best Show Ever as, well, it's not a variety show. It's a show that has variety in it. It's like, no. Sorry, I don't think so. So yeah, I'm a little nervous about that.
Yeah. Again, total hit and miss show. I mean, it's either going to go and people are like, yeah, this is fun. And Neil Patrick Harris is a nice guy and he's doing all this fun stuff and this is quirky. Woohoo. Or it's going to be like, what?
It's like, hey, it's Neil Patrick Harris doing pranks.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Doing dumb stuff. Yeah. I'm not watching it, by the way. That will not be my show. I've only a finite number of hours. It is allotted to me, and I am only going to watch the shows I want to watch.
That's right. Well, it's like I was saying the other night. I did skim through the Jeb Bush part of Colbert because nobody's paying me to watch Jeb Bush. So
right, exactly.
You mm-hmm. know. Okay, we've got a letter from Karen B. in the 530.
Oh yeah.
So greetings, gentlemen, from the 530 at the foot of Mount Shasta. No, I'm not actually in weed, though I do occasionally enjoy the southern breeze blowing into town. But this kind of ties in with other providers. What are your thoughts about Amazon's new relationship with Woody Allen and their deal with the Top Gear guys? Allen brings a lot of baggage, and Clarkson has his own long history of inappropriate behavior. Do you think there will be any kind of backlash against Amazon, or are they controversy-proof because their audience makes a choice to spend that money and view their shows? Or is Amazon simply too big to care?
Well, I mean, no. I people will make value judgments no matter what. I tend to sort of like let the – I mean, unless it's a good point. I will watch it because I still like Woody Allen movies. And, you know, until they put him in jail, until they prove definitively to me that he's guilty of something that I personally, as somebody just sitting here, don't know. I mean, I don't know the facts, so I know what I've read, but I'm not sure I buy it. So I want to know. I mean, other than the obvious, you know, that who he married and people, that's it. If people don't want to watch because of that, they won't. And they're not
right.
watching his movies because of that. They've already made a judgment on Sun Yi. So it's like, I think that's already in the past. Everything in the future about that is, I think, you know, what we should see. it's I think it's different than Cosby.
Yes.
So and as far as Clarkson goes, yeah. Again, we could talk about separating the content from the creator, and I'm a believer in that until somebody does something where I just can't do it. And we all make those choices. Like we have to make. I mean, it's like watching football. I mean, the Raiders just signed Alden Smith. I mean, it's. The NFL is full of people who you don't really want to be pulling for, and yet if you're pulling for your local team, you're kind of supporting the NFL.
Right.
So we all make those judgments day to day. Will it hurt them? I don't think so, actually. I don't think it's really hurt any of Woody Allen's movies right now. I think the bigger question is he going to deliver anything to them? That's the bigger question. And when he does, is it going to be as bad as he says it is? You know, I find that fascinating that he's been down. I mean, he could be doing that as a ploy. He's really downplaying the fact that none of this stuff is going to work. And he doesn't do episodic, so we'll see. Maybe it won't. He does do movies. But they are right to be in business with him. Everybody wanted to be in business with him. I mean, if you're looking for somebody who's sort of genius at doing what he does, that's the person. Whether you like him as a person is totally different.
Right.
Well, and so I don't think that we asked him these questions when we were in LA. Specifically, they were asked about Clarkson and like, have you talked to these guys and so that they don't have this history of getting in trouble with their employees. And this is like Clarkson can do a lot of damage. So in a way, the controversy stemmed around Amazon not having an answer to whether they talked to Clarkson or not. There was nothing, I think, about Allen. I mean, I think the Allen thing is you've either made your decision and you're gone. Whether it affects his current people seeing his current work, I don't think so. People are still going to his movies,
right.
And if you choose not to, you're not. So it's not going to affect this Amazon thing.
Well, and, you know, I was thinking I get Amazon Prime, and I still get it mainly for the shipping, you know,
right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm glad to get Mozart in the Jungle. I'm glad to get Transparent. I'm looking forward to The Man in the High Castle.
Yes.
I'm not really watching a lot of the other stuff, and it's okay. I don't mind that they have all these other things. So, you know, do I care about Bosch?
Right.
Someone will.
Someone does, and someone will. But I agree with you. That's to me, is more of a network show. That doesn't excite me.
Well, that, yeah.
Man in the High Castle, Transparent, that all works for me. And I love Red Oaks. I think that's going to be good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like Man in the High Castle. That's something I read, 25 years ago? My brother turned me on to it. And if you had told me that someone was going to try and do a TV show out of that, I'd have said you were nuts. No one's going to let him. But
right.
I do think it's smart of Amazon to focus on products that are book related, right? And,
sure.
And maybe that was part of the thinking with Bosch. It's like, well, it's a best-selling series of books. You know, and I'd like to see them do more of that instead of just sort of a scattershot, like, here, let's try this, let's try that. Now let's build on this core business and get those people that aren't necessarily watching other TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see. We've got a question from Tom in the 512. So that'd be Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Dear gentlemen of the machine. The upcoming fall season coincides this year with something that has never happened to me before. I got sent a Nielsen diary in the mail along with an invitation to participate. Here's what fascinates me. And
yes.
and I can say he's exactly right, because I've gotten 3 Nielsen diaries in the last year and a half.
Wow.
And this is nuts. Here's what fascinates me. I watch a fair amount of TV, but there's no way for me to tell them about it. The diary presumes that you're buying a cable package or watching over the air. I buy shows from iTunes. I do Netflix and Hulu and HBO Now, but I don't actually have a cable TV subscription. That got me wondering. There must be fascinatingly detailed numbers available from various providers. Any cable service with a DVR or streaming service should know not just exactly what I watch, but what I fast forward, what I give up on. But those services don't publish their results, and from what I can tell, the success or failure of a new show is based on old-fashioned ratings. Is there any indication that this might change soon? What data is actually available to the networks and content creators these days, and why can't some version of that be made public? What are the numbers that actually matter for whether a show stays on or what's a hit and what's not? I realize different networks and providers might answer differently, but I feel like there has to be some way we can understand what people are really watching. Many thanks, Tom and the 512, saving you some barbecue and breakfast tacos.
Nice. Yes, in the ATX. I will say this. No, it's not going to change anytime soon. I wish it would change. They've been wanting this to change forever. In my television class and my visual studies class that I teach at a college here, I always make the analogy that, you know, if Nielsen had the breakthrough that radio had, like it used to be, people would call up record stores, literally call up record stores. And it was always the stoner at the front who was listening to Dark Side of the Moon. And they'd say, what are you selling? What's your big sellers? And that's how Billboard was working. And it just word of mouth. And it was like, oh, we sold a bunch of Dark Side of the Moon. That's what they said. Even though they maybe didn't, it was just what that guy was listening to. As soon as they went to an actual, like a system where you just checked the actual stock that was going in and out of the store, then the two bands, the two artists that became number one sensations, the minute it was implemented, were Bone Thugs and Harmony, a rap band almost no one out in the world had heard of except for people who were listening to it, and there were lots of them. And the other artist was Garth Brooks. And so country and rap immediately became most of the top sellers on the list at that point. When before, if it was always like somebody just word of mouth. So right now, Nielsen isn't word of mouth so much, but it is extrapolating one person's viewing habits and putting it on hundreds of other people. And that's problematic because, as he said, hey, I watch all these shows. I just don't watch them in the traditional way. Now, tracking all these people, there has to be a better way. Jesus, it's 2015. Like we have chips in our animals. We have got to find a better way to track things, right?
The thing that blew my mind when I got the first one was we got one back in 1977 sent to the house, and it looks exactly the same. It's almost 40 years. It's exactly the same diary. You have to write everything down.
Oh, yeah.
If you're too lazy to write it down, someone else is watching it. They'll get ratings. I don't have to write it down.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's insane.
It's archaic, and that's what we're on. And so, look, they're fighting tooth and nail to get a different system or to get Nielsen to get upgraded. Nielsen is fighting the public relations war to say that they are changing and they are accurate and they are representative. But, I mean, they barely started doing colleges in, like, what, 4 or 5 years ago? You know, the 18 to 25 demo didn't even exist until, like, 5 years ago. There's a lot of newness that we should have been doing for years. And I mean, if we had the level of numbers that Netflix is getting, where it's the level of engagement, not just the number, but the level of engagement tells you something, that is more helpful to everybody. But we don't have a system. The networks and standard cable do not have a system in place or a company that they can trust to do that. We're not there yet. So it's always going to be take it with a grain of salt for me. That's I always think that. I was like, yeah, really? Only that many people? I think there was way more than that watched it, but you never know.
Well, and maybe with Apple TV's new system, like if I'm getting my local broadcast networks through an app, say, then they could measure. They could say, he used Siri to skip ahead to where there was a joke. You know,
yeah.
But you know, will we get to that point? I don't know. I mean,
it's like he said, Siri, search for Doodlebutt.
Yeah,
I need more Doodlebutt scenes, and it fast forwards automatically to the Doodlebutt scene, which I would watch, and then they know how to make shows. But yeah, until then, where's the accuracy? The technology's there; it's just not being implemented.
Yeah,
but also, I mean, not to get wonky, which we're not anyway, but. At some point, you'd have to have privacy concerns.
Yep.
Right? I mean, people they're only paying like $5 for somebody to actually take these Nielsen things. It's way more work than it's worth. But if you do actually have a home that is connected and you're not just doing it online, you have enormous power because you are representing a lot of people. So, you know, definitely do your Key and Peele's and your, rate all the good shows so that the bad stuff dies.
Right. Well, and, you know, I look at the things that get attention, the things that are in the media all the time, the things that are influencing other shows and other mediums. And then I look at the ratings. I mean, Key and Peele and Amy Schumer and even the Colbert Report, they're not getting huge ratings, but people are watching them, clearly. Right. You know, clearly. And people are getting the jokes, and they're talking about them, and they're sharing them and saying, you have to see this. And it's not measured in the ratings at all. It doesn't reflect it at all.
Right.
So, crazy. And now, so it's really nice how all of these things are thematic. The last letter we have from Edom in the 818, which would be L.A.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Originally from the 925, so around Oakland, and with much love to the 510.
Yes.
In episode 49, you talked a bit about discovery, and I was reminded of why I'm hesitant to cut the cord. I often find new things by clicking through channels and stopping on what catches my eye. It's how I discovered Doctor Who, among other shows. If we move closer to a model of a la carte channels, how does that affect the process of discovery? I'm thinking of those who pick channels they like, but then a new show appears on a channel they didn't select. If they hear the buzz and want to give it a try, are they out of luck until it comes out on DVD, or hopefully stocked by their local library? And then Jason and or David, have you cut the cord? And if so, how do you get Doctor Who? I'll answer that in a minute.
He steals it. No, kidding.
I'll avoid in a minute. I imagine each episode based on the title, and I am remarkably accurate.
That's a great way to do it. Yeah. I think that actually applies to CSI Cyber.
Well, I actually think it's better than CSI Cyber.
Yeah, no doubt.
discovery. That's a good question.
Yeah, that is just even the idea of discovery. And I often said, yeah. I totally get that, but I don't know if it's realistic for the future, because I remember saying when I was a big newspaper reader, and now I am not a news. I mean, I read newspaper content, but not in a newspaper.
Right.
And I used to say the thing that would get me about the New York Times is I'm like, okay, I'm not a big business fan. You know, I don't invest well or at all. I'm just I'm not good with money. I don't care. I should care, but I don't care. But I always found something. Thumbing through the New York Times, I'd see a headline, I'd start to read it, and the next thing you know, I'm reading a gigantic business story, and I'm really entertained. And so that's the idea of discovery. The idea that you flip through pages to get to your jump page, and then along the way, you see another four or five stories that you like. Now, that's how the internet is now, where you skip things, right? So you're
right.
But at the same time, I still think there are elements, there's ways you can do it. Like when I'm on a site, because I'm drawn there, let's just say even for a sports site. If I'm going to someplace to get my 49ers news, I may also see Giants headlines, or I may see some local woman won the college championship in tennis, and I might read that because it's a link and I have a picture. So similarity, not quite the same level of discovery, but the similarity is there. But I also wonder if, and, you know, I'm sort of an outlier in some ways because I get everything because THR pays for it. So it's like I have this enormous DirecTV thing where I can't do the flipping around because it just takes too long to go from – I can't even go through the channel guide
scroll down.
It takes too long. So a lot of times I'll just say I don't remember where something is because everything changes. So I'll just say, oh, I know where like ESPN is. I'm going to jump through all these – DirecTV cinema ads, and I'm going to go to the 200s, and then from the 200s I can start scrolling and I'll probably find where AMC is because everything's just digitally automated for me. I have everything recorded. Right. So, and I don't remember channel names like where AMC is, or do I have Bravo and what number is that? So I don't know if anybody is really kind of flipping around like they used to. Remember? I mean, when you have fewer channels, you just flip around and then you would discover something.
Well, I do it because I've got over the air for the basic stuff. So yeah, I can flip through and each one has, you know, one or two extra digital channels on there. So, you know, I've got maybe 20 channels to flip through if I'm looking at the local networks and stuff, or the local affiliates. But yeah, when it comes to Sling TV or Hulu or any of that stuff, I listen to podcasts. I read you and Seppenwall and Feinberg and Mo Ryan, and you know, I get my information from other sources than just flipping. And I discover stuff. I mean, I wouldn't have watched Mr. Robot if it hadn't been for Jason going, oh my God, you have to watch Mr. Robot.
Right, exactly, right? Yeah.
You know.
And there are those ways of discovery, right? I mean, Twitter is one of them. I don't know if everybody's on it, but these are people I'm mentioning, I'm sure, via Twitter or other sources. But I'll just give you a short example. I used to be a huge foodie when I lived in San Francisco. I wanted to go to all the restaurants. I wanted to keep up with all the new openings. And then you have kids, and then you don't leave the house. You don't have any money and all that stuff. And now, years later, and I'm live by myself. I got my kids, but I can go out more. I can do more things. I want to get back in the food thing. So about a year ago, I started just on Twitter. I subscribed to the Inside Scoop blog from the San Francisco Chronicle, because the Chronicle's got a great food coverage, and this Inside Scoop blog basically tracks restaurants and food stuff. So anything that's new openings, closings, new restaurants, somebody's got the best new mixed drink, etc. That's all of a sudden, that was my flipping, because now I just look at their, every time one of their tweets comes up, it tells me, oh, somebody opened a new restaurant in the Mint Plaza. Oh, okay, I'll watch that. Or I'll look at that. And maybe I'll go eat there. And or here's the new drink trend. Or here's the restaurant in San Francisco with the best wine menu. So that I think there's still avenues of discovery in the modern world.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you've got the movie trailers app on Apple TV. You know, I've found a couple of movies through that. And so, you know, you go to YouTube, you're going to see trailers for TV shows. You're going to see promotional things. You're going to see commercials when you're just watching TV, hopefully. Right. And even like Hulu with their new ad-free option is still going to have ads for Hulu stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of ad-free-esque. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I think there are still ways to discover. But, yeah, I mean, that's my thing, is Twitter and following you guys, right? I mean, I read What's Alan Watching every day, unless he's on vacation.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, and really from listening to the podcasts, there are things that I discovered before joining the Incomparable from listening to the Incomparable.
Sure. I mean, and that's, you know, that's what we're doing. I mean, that's the modern way of doing it. I think that I discover music in lots of different ways, but one of the great ways is to go to an aggregation site of all the music reviews and say, oh, look at all these albums where he's talking about it. Let me give a listen on Spotify. So there's, you know, there's, do I want to buy this album, et cetera. I mean, there's ways to find it. So I'm not completely pessimistic that things will get lost because we can't flip around.
Yeah. So, well, I think we've hit just about an hour. I think we're doing,
woohoo, age 50. Woohoo.
Doing yeoman's work without Jason around. And
yes,
you know, we hope he gets back from Hawaii or wherever he is.
Yeah. Way to miss the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell? Come on.
Nice, Jason. Slacker. It's not like he's, does he even work anymore? Oh, right.
Yeah.
All the Apple stuff last week. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, he can have a vacation. I'm actually going on vacation next week. We'll have to figure out some way that this podcast gets done. I will tell you that.
Uh-oh.
But right now, I think Jason and I might be recording this late Friday night or something next time for 51, because I'm going to be in Big Sur. So wish me well among the pines, relaxing, having a little bit of wine, and decompressing before the gigantic wave of fall shows comes.
And imagining a Coke ad while you do.
Right, exactly.
So, all right. Well, I guess everyone can tweet at us if they want to talk to us. You are Bastard Machine. Jason is J. Snell, and I'm D. Lore. If you have questions for the show, tweet at TVTM, or find us on Facebook, or email to podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. I think that's... Is that everything? Have I done the boilerplate?
That is it. That is a good boilerplate.
All right. See, I'm just like Colbert. I'm easing into it. I'm getting my sea legs.
You got your sea legs, David.
So.
Excellent. And it's good talking to you again.
Well,
no doubt. You know what? It'll be sooner than you think, because we already know that Jason is kind of like lazy. So I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Oh, undoubtedly. So, well, this is David J. Lore signing off, and Jason will be back next week for Area 51, Episode 51. So, as they say, be there, aloha. Square Box, always watching. so you don't have to.